ball spark.
You want good words? Data language.
Talk real sports with a real man.
Come after me. I'm a man. I'm 40.
And now here's the be-all, end-all, know-it-all of high school, college, and pro sports. Aaron Skinny Calc with The Skinny on Sports.
We're talking about practice, man. I'm the MVP.
Good Friday morning out there, Western and Northwestern Oklahoma. Welcome to The Skinny on Sports, 98.1 FM, The Sports Animal. Glad to have you along for the next hour. Football, football, football. We'll talk about high school football at the end of the show, college football in the middle, and last night rehash what happened down in Tampa between Dallas and Tampa Bay. Also look ahead to the opening weekend of the NFL schedule. So pretty simple what's going on today. Also a little breaking news in the college football ranks that we can get to here in the middle of the show as well. Good morning, Jared Atha.
How are you? You good?
A little
delayed answer there.
Well, it's just deja vu all over again. How many times in the last 20 years have I seen that exact Dallas Cowboys game?
I know.
I have seen it a ton.
I know.
I've already got Drew texting us the stats from last night. The one that really sings out is time of possession, the way the Cowboys were able to control the football.
Yeah.
Mostly through the air, though, and that's something we're going to talk about, at least for me, what needs to improve for Dallas. But last night's game down in Tampa, I don't think neither one of us had very much of an expectation that Dallas would be able to really even be in the game. You know, you're just looking, or at least I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I think neither one of us thought they had any chance to win.
I think that was the consensus yesterday.
Wasn't it?
We were actually just kind of hoping for a good game, you know. And the spread was big, as far as NFL spreads are concerned.
Highest of the week,
8.5, highest of the week. So the way the game played out, has it come to this, Aaron? We're happy with losses as Dallas fans. Are we just like, that was a nice effort. Good
here's
job,
the truth,
boys.
Though. Here's the truth. That's a little bit ridiculous, and here's why. They didn't play anybody in the preseason. So, to me, this was kind of like their dress rehearsal. I mean, they set themselves up to lose this game,
yeah,
in my mind, the way they handled the preseason. Turns out maybe a lot of people are just going to start handling it like they did. Everyone looked fine. I mean, Dak was awesome. Hey, here's the truth of it. Dak was the best quarterback on the field last night.
Yeah.
He was.
He was.
He was the best quarterback on the field. The problem is everyone and their dog knew. Great kick, Greg Zuerlein. Dallas loses by 2.
Yeah, too much time.
Too much time. Yep. And so, you know, you got to be – if you're a Dallas Cowboy fan going into that game, you could not have asked for more from that team. They played their hearts out. The defense actually in the second half was pretty damn good.
There were times that they
– second half, they were pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah.
They really were.
Near the end of the first half, forcing that fumble –
well, they had.
Am I timing off?
No, yeah, that was the end of the third quarter.
Was it end of the third or end of the second?
You're talking about Godwin's fumble?
Listen,
it was in the fourth quarter.
I caught the game, not in the middle of the game, because I had softball last night, so I showed up, turned it on. Wow, I have to look at the progression of the game. Point is, they were doing things that, and I think it was Collingsworth who said it, towards the end of the season last year, they started forcing turnovers, but it really didn't matter. And it looked like they picked up where they left off. So yeah, I think it's going to be obviously a better defense than what we saw last year.
The Godwin fumble was with about 6 minutes left.
In the
fourth quarter.
In the fourth. That's
into
the
end zone.
About.
You're talking about the first one.
I'm talking about the first one.
The first turnover was a fumble.
That's when Collingsworth said it.
But. Yeah. Yeah, that was the first turnover. Yeah. Matter of fact, Tampa turned it over on back-to-back plays.
Right.
With the fumble and then the interception when it kind of bounced off Fournette's hands. That was early. And then, you know, they forced the fumble at the end when it looks like Godwin's going to score the clinching touchdown, knock it loose, get the ball back, and then march all the way down, kick the field goal here. but the truth of it is, I mean, Drew's going on about how he picked 30-28. Whatever, dude. You're such – the homerism is just palpable. But there were lots of good things. There really were, if you're a Dallas Cowboys fan. But the problem remains – two things. One, and they both go together. One, not scoring touchdowns when you get the ball down inside the 20. What did they attempt? 3 field goals last night? Made 2 of them?
Yeah.
Missed a 31-yarder. Whereas Tampa, what were they? 4 for 4? Would have been 5 for 5 probably if they'd have tried to score a touchdown on the last possession. When they got it there, they scored.
Don't forget the extra point that
extra point doinked off.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, if the kicker makes the extra point in a 31-yarder, Brady has to score a touchdown to tie it.
Right.
That doesn't happen because, you know, Zuerlein, give him credit for knocking in that last one right down the middle. But I have a question. Is there's no way you can do this, and I was thinking at the time, but you just assume Brady's going to beat you, right? And they flashed up that stat, and I was actually kind of shocked at what he was. He was 8 of 18 in those situations needing a field goal of winning in his career. I would have guessed way higher than that.
Yeah, I know.
Percentage-wise.
And I know you said it last night. You got to play for a touchdown here. You give not a field goal because if you give Brady too much time, he's going to march down the field.
He's going to get like 35 yards.
I think he gets that moniker of doing that because he does it on the biggest stage. He did it last night in prime time. He did it, it was his first Super Bowl.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, who's really the guy that's known for comeback wins or final drive wins? It's more like Aaron Rodgers.
Well, Brady's 3rd all-time on the list. That was his 49th.
Okay.
The top 2 are Manning and
Manning
and Brees.
I should have went to Manning first.
Peyton Manning and Drew Brees are the top 2, and Brady is 3rd. So,
listen, against I would – this might be hyperbole, but I would almost say against any other team, Dallas wins that game if it's not Tom Brady taking the snaps, if it's not for Tom
Brady. Yeah, except for I've seen Dallas lose that game over and over and over, and it doesn't matter who the quarterback is.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? It just – here's you can't make this decision, or if you do it, better work. But looking back on it, the 4th and 6 from the 30-yard line, when Dallas chose to kick the go-ahead field goal, which is the percentage play, I get it.
Sure.
But I wonder what the percentages really are of making a 47-yarder versus picking up a 4th and 6. Then at that point, you force
– milking a little bit clock.
Brady never gets the ball.
Right. Keep the ball off his hands.
Because you're at, what, minute 24, I think?
Right.
They've got one timeout, Tampa does. At that point, you're run, timeout, run, run. Dallas still had their timeouts. Then Zuerlein makes the kick with no time on the clock. Now, I understand how impossible a choice that is. But Brady is just the guy that you don't want to give the ball back to, even though the numbers don't necessarily bear out what we're seeing. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
From that stat that they flashed up, I almost can't believe that stat's right. But it 8, you know, now 9 of 19, so half the time. So you're looking at half, you know. Then they were showing the percentages of making all those kicks. They never showed the 47-yarder that went right in, which the chances are probably upwards of 80 or 90, something like that, with kickers right now, the way that they can hit those. The getting the 4th and 6 probably closer to the 50-50. That Brady was leading you down the field. So, you know, the numbers are probably in your favor. It's just that no one in their right mind expected Brady not to go down and get a field goal.
Yeah.
You know, and Dallas loses in the the same fashion they always do.
Well, I know we had picked Dallas to win the East, so we were both consensus on that. Does this necessarily this outcome of the game last night and how they played, how Dak played, does it change our perceptions of Dallas, not only to win the East, but, you know, maybe to be better than what we thought?
Dak's been awesome. His last 4 games, let me find that stat. Yeah, it was great. Don't get me wrong.
There was worry that he would be really rusty and could he bounce back from his injury,
and
both ankle and shoulder, and I think he put that to rest. I think everyone's like, you know what? He's still Dak. He's still playing.
As the game moved along, yes, it felt like he was kind of throwing change-ups at first.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the out to CD that came up short. There was a couple of throws where it was like, is he babying it? Is he? You know what I'm saying? Just wasn't quite. Here's the numbers for Dak in his last 4 games. 34 of 47 for 450 and 1 touchdown. 37 of 57 for 472 and 3 touchdowns. 41-58, 502 and 4, 42-58 last night, 403 and 3. The problem is he's having to throw it 50 times a game because they can't run the football. Or they're choosing, and Collinsworth kept saying it, and he was right about last night, especially against that defense. The best chance Dallas had to win, once you knew that Dak was fine, was for him to throw the ball against a couple of backups in that secondary as they got some people in and out of the game, Tampa did, and not have to try to run it at Sue and Pierre Paul and Vita Vea and all those guys, because that was clearly a losing proposition.
Yeah.
And so you understand kind of the way the game plan, where it went to. And quite frankly, it was that way all night. I mean, he threw, 35 times in the first half? You know, it wasn't like Dallas was ever trying to establish the run because they didn't have much faith that they could, and turns out they were right about that. But at some point, Dallas has got to be able to run the football inside the 20s to turn threes into sevens. And that was, as much as, yes, the kicker missed kicks last night, that's true. And if he just makes a couple, then, you know, Dallas has a better chance to win. But if he's never out there kicking field goals because you're punching it into the end zone just one of the three times that you missed, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And that's been a constant theme for Dallas, is not being able to score in the red zone and not being able to win close games.
Yeah, imagine two things defensively here. Imagine at the end of the first half if they'd returned that Hail Mary interception. I thought he was going to do it. I thought, he's got a wall. There's nobody going to be back there.
He ran into his own guy.
He did. Why didn't he cut
They
up,
never
cut
showed
back.
A view. I wish they'd have showed a better view, because all you saw from where he got tackled
were blue jerseys and one white jersey.
And it was an offensive lineman.
Yeah.
And you know good and well Brady ain't tackling nobody.
Oh, no.
He's not going to be. And it's like.
But imagine that. Yeah, go ahead.
You know what? That play, there was a few plays like that where it was like, oh, my gosh, such a great chance. There was that one. Hey, Collinsworth signaled this. The one where Brady was falling down, just flipped it out there. And Parsons, it was almost like, you remember in the 2001 OSU Bedlam game?
Yeah.
That the Cowboys shocked the Sooners? Right there toward, on that last drive, when the ball is up in the air, and Roy's standing there, Roy Williams, the great Roy Williams, has it. It's coming right to him. It's kind of floating, and he's got a pick. And I think it was Tatum Bell jumped in front of him and caught it. Yeah. That is exactly what happened last night. It was like Parsons had it. He knew it was his, and he was about to go score a touchdown. Wow. And Fournette came in front of him and caught that one. And then the one, it turned out a great play by Diggs. But he got his fingers on that on the last drive.
That could have ended it.
A couple of plays.
His timing was off on the jump, or the pass was just too high, but he was so close. But just a couple of those. And oddly enough, like I said, it gave me encouragement for this defense. It seemed like they're like that almost there feeling, and this is just game one. So if they can improve on last night's performance, the defense I don't think is going to be as much of a liability as some would say.
Yeah, stopping the run is a little bit, but they did it last night. It's hard to tell about run defense last night because neither team tried on offense to run the football. You know what I'm saying?
Not really.
It
didn't feel that way.
It was kind of like window dressing when you handed it off, but put
and
the ball in the
nice
hands of the quarterback.
It was nice to see the first game of the year, it was quarterback versus quarterback, right? You got these two name quarterbacks. It was kind of fun.
So after all
it was really fun, actually.
So after all the glass half full looking ahead for Dallas this season, there's also this. They won the turnover battle 4-1 and got beat.
Yeah. Again, that positive feeling I get about the defense winning the turnover battle. I mean, you did it against one of the GOATs in quarterback history, right? So, again, looking forward, I said this last night, their next game, eight games are very winnable.
Yeah, I mean,
very winnable.
This was the only game outside their division that they're going to play a team that made the playoffs last year. And so, you know, that's.
Let me pull up their schedule.
There's a lot of things to be excited about, I think, if you're a Dallas Cowboys fan, yeah, with the way they played last night. Yeah. But now they've got to continue doing it.
Yeah, they have to. They can't just turn it on during primetime. You got to do it on a Sunday afternoon in L.A. against the Chargers next week. See, it's but the next eight, Chargers, Eagles, Panthers, Giants, at the Pats, at Minnesota, Broncos, Falcons, and then at Kansas City, and that's where I draw the line. That's where I think obviously Kansas City is Kansas City. But all those I just mentioned are very winnable. Very winnable. You got the next 1, 2, 3 out of 8 on the road. So they could position themselves really well by the time they get to middle of November. If they play like that and if they stop kicking field goals and start kicking extra points.
Yep, that's right.
So, again, all in all, I mean, I know it's not the outcome Dallas fans were wanting, but in my opinion, it's a better outcome than what I thought was going to happen last night.
Yeah, it was. I mean, it's just the same.
Because, I mean, like I said, I was at softball last night. My phone dings. Tampa Bay, touchdown, 7-0. I go, here we go. And then a few minutes later, ding, 7-7. Oh, okay. Well, they might keep it close for a half. And then we got that classic of a opener. It was nice.
Yeah.
What else was nice?
Fans in the stands.
The roar of the crowd.
No doubt. Yeah, the NFL brass, I promise you, is smiling ear to ear right this second.
With how that turned out.
How the game turned out. There, you know, it's – I get it. You start with a bigger number because you get Dallas in the game because of the national following. But – that number dwindles throughout the night if it's a blowout. So there is a little bit of a risk in having the Cowboys in that game. And it paid off in spades because that's going to be a ginormous rating for that game. You know it is. Opening night, Brady and Dak, Dallas and Tampa Bay.
Yeah.
And the way the game played out, there was no reason to tune out. It was always a close game. It was never a two-score game, was it? Yeah, I guess it was. It was 28-19 at one point. It was a two-score game, 28-19. But it never
felt that
you
way.
You never felt like Dallas was out of it.
Right, exactly. Felt like Dallas was out of it. And in my mind, when it felt like they kept climbing this mountain, because they never led until that field goal. And am I right?
Yeah, I think that's right.
Yeah. And I thought, if they get
they did. 16-14.
16, yeah, it was brief. Brief, very brief. But my point was, towards the end of that game, I thought, if they get the lead, I feel like that might do it. But then you made a great text that, well, you can't give Tom Brady that much time.
Yeah.
Can't do it.
It was just one of those things. You've seen that movie too many times from Brady, and you've seen that movie too many times against the Dallas Cowboys themselves.
Well, we had Brady and Gronk.
Yeah, Gronk was good.
Gronk was good.
So was Antonio Brown.
Yes.
I thought he was in prison.
Well, I completely forgot he was still
on the team. Guess not. CD with a couple of big drops. The one in the middle of the field was a contested catch, but it's one you got to make. It ends up being an interception that's run down there for, you know, a goal-to-go situation. He's got to make that play. And it's the one thing that he has had a problem with in the NFL in these first two seasons is dropping the football, which is something we never really saw at OU. So
I know
it's, you know, the first one would have kept a drive going. The second one, it turned out it went through his hands. And I get it. There's three guys around, but you got to be able to make that catch. It hit you right in the hands. Instead of a first down at the 50, it's first down and goal the other way because of the way the ball kind of bounced around right to Carlton Davis. So that's something that needs to get better. And like I said, Dak outplayed Brady. I don't care what you say. Brady's going to get all the credit. But Dak was the better quarterback out there on the field last night. Looking ahead to the best games of week one, I've got Pittsburgh at Buffalo. See what Josh Allen and the crew can do against a good Pittsburgh defense. Also, you got to wonder about Big Ben. Where's he going to be at? You know, see where kind of Pittsburgh's at. Arizona at Tennessee, your preseason MVP at Tennessee. Tennessee's defense wasn't very good last year, so could this be a chance for the Cardinals to start off on the right foot with an out-of-division win. Chargers at the football team. Justin Herbert, year two. Football team's defense is awesome. Seattle at Indy. Miami at New England. How much do you think the roars are going to get in Tua's head if he gets thoroughly outplayed by Mac Jones?
Ooh, not a lot. He seems like a guy that blocks out that noise. Doesn't he? The dude's dealt with a lot.
He has.
You know, I just don't see that being an issue for him.
He has.
But, I mean, you'll see, you'll hear a lot of it. You'll read a lot of it.
Klee at Kansas City.
Yeah, that's
rematch
right.
of the divisional playoff game last year. Then also Green Bay at New Orleans. Which one of those? I think Cleveland-Kansas City
Cleveland,
is kind of the
Kansas
headliner,
City,
isn't it?
Yeah, that's the one I'm really looking forward to. Out of all those you mentioned, obviously Arizona for my personal reasons. But yeah, you know it'll be on here, Cleveland at Kansas City regional broadcast. Sure, right? Surely. What afternoon game on CBS?
Yeah, I think you could probably book that one.
Yeah, that's the one I'm circling. Green Bay's New Orleans could be a good one, too. I bet you that's Game of the Week on Fox.
Yeah, I would imagine that's exactly right.
Monday night's a dud, in my opinion, after the news from Baltimore yesterday.
Yeah, that's the last thing I got on the NFL. Baltimore, my gosh, they are looking more and more. Dakota texted me this yesterday. I couldn't agree more. They're looking just like the Niners of last year. Remember, the 49ers were just decimated by injury throughout the season, early in the season, and this happened to Baltimore before the season. Top three running backs gone. All-pro corner Marcus Peters gone. Lots of – Lamar's probably thinking, let's shut down practice. Maybe we shouldn't have any of those for a while so that my guys are – going to be around. Looks like they pick up Latavius Murray. There's Le'Veon Bell on the scrap heap, Tyson Williams. So a bunch of names. We're going to find out if Jim's theory about running backs holds true, because they're literally picking up just anybody to try to fill the shoes of Gus Edwards, Justice Hill, and also J.K. Dobbins. So Ravens, you mentioned it yesterday. I picked them to go to the playoffs. Not feeling quite as great about that at the moment, but surely they can find guys to get a couple.
Listen,
of
I'm not going to be smart or claim I'm smart because I did not pick the Ravens to go to playoffs, because I made that pick before all this happened yesterday. I won't claim that I'm smart. Maybe I will.
It's going to be a lot on Lamar's shoulders now. Team that loved to run the football, kind of use his legs, play action off of that.
Yeah. Should
tough
be
start.
A good. I think it would be a good weekend here.
It's ripping and roaring already after last night's game. Breaking news from Big 12 Conference realignment. The Big 12 has officially extended invitations to BYU, Cincinnati, Houston, and UCF. BYU statement specifically says all sports will begin Big 12 schedules in 23-24.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see about that date.
Okay.
But Big 12 officially has invited BYU, Cincinnati, Houston, and UCF into the conference, making it back. Hey, by the way, congratulations to the Big 12.
Staying alive. That's their motto.
And actually having 12 teams.
That's their motto now, right? That should be their theme song by the Bee Gees, Staying Alive.
It's amazing. Twice in the past decade, everyone's wanted to
bury them.
Bury them. Put dirt on the grave, and the Big 12 has come out of there.
A lot to unravel about this. How, first off, the quality of schools. BYU is a good get, I believe.
Oh, yeah.
That's been in discussion even before the OU-Texas stuff going to the SEC. But what about, I mean, is this a good get for, I mean, you're in the Florida market now.
Central Florida is literally the biggest school in the nation. Did you know that?
I think I did know this because they got a lot of commuters in.
They are literally the biggest school in the nation.
And I'm telling you,
by enrollment,
go back and watch somewhat. I mean, I say their heyday. I think they're still kind of in their heyday, but they packed that stadium and it looks impressive.
Yeah, and that's the one thing that's a little bit, I don't know, worrisome, but everyone fits that way because it's all kind of 50,000 to 65,000 seat stadiums. Obviously, the two biggest
65
are moving on. Yeah, and that's kind of that fits in with everybody else. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And so, I think what you're doing there is, yeah, you get the Florida market. Maybe you get to be able to recruit a little bit in Florida, and also maybe you have caught lightning in a bottle with somebody that's ready to explode. They've had success in a smaller, you know, what I'm, in a smaller conference.
Yeah,
maybe you catch them before. You know, maybe I'm not sitting here saying they're going to have the meteoric rise of what Miami did in the 80s, but maybe you're something along those lines as becoming more of a power, and you get him in the conference before somebody else plucks him away.
I agree.
You've also got Cincinnati, which is obvious. It's a travel partner for West Virginia. Gets somebody closer to them. And then Houston is Texas. You continue to have a foothold in Texas.
And in one of the largest metropolitan markets.
That's right.
Yeah.
And so you understand they each make sense and
those
why they
two
make
right
sense.
There make the Kelvin Sampson or a Sampson coach might be a son by then. Back in the Big 12.
Yes.
I mean, that. So in
Cincinnati basketball.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that improves the basketball landscape.
BYU hadn't been terrible at basketball by any stretch.
They've had their days.
UCF had Taco Fall. Almost beat Zion in the tournament a couple years ago.
Right.
So, yeah, it's obviously a football-driven thing. And with losing the two you lost and you can't get Notre Dame, I think BYU was the best one out there.
Yeah.
And the Big 12 got that done. And so we'll see where that gets. And I do think that it'll – I think they'll probably be able to in some way – I mean, the Power 5 is such just a made-up thing anyway. It's not like there's a specific designation, but I think they probably will hold on to that. And so now the next thing we look at is, A, when's it going to happen, and B – forward to the 14 playoff going to 12. Those are the next things on kind of the off-field horizon in college football. On the field this weekend, Oklahoma State welcomes Tulsa to Boone Pickens Stadium. Both teams struggled in their opener. OSU was able to squeak by Missouri State while Tulsa fell to UC Davis. Tulsa will be getting a bunch of those guys back, it looks like, from the suspension from the fight after the bowl game. So a different Tulsa team personnel-wise than what we saw in week one at home against UC Davis. Also, different personnel-wise for Oklahoma State, as it looks for all intents and purposes, like Spencer Sanders will be the quarterback this week for the Pokes. Lot to unravel from last week's game for Oklahoma State. Unable to move anybody off the football trying to run it. 1.9 yards per carry. That has to be better, obviously, for Oklahoma State, not only in this game but moving forward. I have a sneaking suspicion for me that the return of Sanders helps the run game some because he can use his legs maybe when things aren't blocked up right or just to go get some yards when things are covered. I think that's going to help them run the football better. I don't know what Tulsa's going to be able to do offensively against the OSU defense.
Yeah, but I wouldn't be shocked if the score is similar like it was last week, 23-16, 24-17, somewhere in that vicinity, because both teams are preparing for each other, but it's not really the same thing. Throw the game film out, right? Different quarterback for OSU. You got guys coming back for Tulsa. It's kind of a weird way to it has to be difficult on both sides to prepare for them, right? That's how I mean, so there's going to be some stuff that both teams have not seen. Obviously some people both teams have not seen. So I think that's kind of a factor into this thing, and I could see it being a low-scoring game.
I could too, and doesn't it seem like a lot of times these are between these two teams pretty low-scoring?
Yeah, it was last year, wasn't it?
16-7, maybe.
Yeah, it was
something like that. I mean, OSU lost two offensive linemen and the quarterback. Like, what was it? The first series, Sanders went out, and then by the halftime, two offensive linemen were out. So I don't know if it's going to be quite that low scoring. But people are thinking that OSU is going to have trouble in this one. I don't. I think Oklahoma State handles this pretty easily. A couple of touchdown win for the Pokes, for me.
Okay.
I just think that they're going to hear it all week long about how bad they played, how they couldn't block anybody, how they can't move anybody off the line of scrimmage. And I think that'll help them out, and they'll play a lot better this week than what they did last week. Lots of questions on the text line about OU. I mean, listen, these first two, I think what you're going to see is playing a bunch of different dudes. You've got a different center on the offensive line. You got guys playing a different position, trying to find the right formula before Nebraska comes to town, and for sure before you go down to the Cotton Bowl or maybe even up to Manhattan on October 2nd. And so, you know, you can say what you want. I mean, Oklahoma runs the football as good or better than anybody in the conference basically every year. I don't think that's not soft. You know, I think the perception of Oklahoma football is so much different than the reality of what happens, especially on the offense. People think it's just people think because Riley came from the Mike Leach tree that it's Texas Tech of the early 2000s. That's not the case. Oklahoma wants to run the football and sticks with running the football. Now, the other day, they didn't for whatever reason, but for a majority of Lincoln Riley's time, that's what makes his offenses so hard to stop, because he is willing and able to run the football.
Yeah, the balance there. That's the thing we went into before last week's game, was because there was concern at the running back depth of some people say, well, that's not a big deal because all he does is throw it around. No, if you really watch, if you're really paying attention, OU really likes to run it first at times, and they'll run it until they have to throw it at times. I think last week, too, there were situations. I don't know. I mean, do you feel like he didn't want to run as much because of the depth?
You wonder about that.
Or just like, you know what, we got to change our philosophy a little bit because we're not going to be able to run our guys as hard as we would like. But maybe he just needs to go back and go, you know what, we need to run these guys as hard as we can because they got to get used to taking those. They're going to get more of a workload.
I mean, listen, dude, you're sitting here hounding on one half of football. Have you watched the last 5 years of Lincoln Riley? They run the damn football all the time. That's what they're predicated on. And if you'll notice, when they don't, when their offense isn't executing the way that you're used to it executing, it's because they can't run the football. They want to run it. They want to. Just go look at the stats. I don't. For the last 5 years, the balance that they've had on offense has been incredible, and it's because they run it better and more often than people think they do. The people that don't watch the games like we do, the offense is built on running the football first. I'm telling you, that's the way it goes. Now, was the script
for the
to
record?
Throw it?
You weren't yelling at me
a couple of times. No, the texting here. It's like, did you watch the? Okay, so the script was to throw it five times in a row to start a Tulane game. What? That's the point being, when they don't run the football effectively, like they are accustomed to doing, that's when the balance goes away and it becomes easier to defend any offense. It doesn't matter who it is. If it's one dimensional, the defense has the upper hand because they know you can't do one or two things. You can only do one.
Right, that's why it was I mean,
now I think the question
like Missouri State against OSU, they knew Illingsworth wasn't going to use his legs
and they knew they couldn't run it.
Exactly.
And so that's why Oklahoma State scored 3 points in the second half, because they had to throw and they couldn't against nine guys covering. It's pretty simple. Now, how much does having two scholarship running backs change the philosophy? That is the question.
That's what I was saying.
That's the question.
That's the question. Is it, or and there was also questions of, you know, was Riley and staff not willing to open up the rest of the playbook?
Well, that's obvious.
That can be said about a lot of teams in week one, week zero,
absolutely.
Whatever.
When you're playing teams you know you're better than,
right.
You don't show the.
You,
everybody does that.
I was surprised we saw Williams go in to punch it in for six. I'm surprised we didn't see that come OU Texas. You know what I mean?
Well, I mean, that gets you something to plan against. Moving forward.
And speaking of that, to that point, I have no problem with a coach opening up his playbook from day one. And that way you're showing their future opponents, good Lord, we got to prepare for all of that.
I mean, there is that to be said, that it's not a surprise as much as it is a, you know, extra things they have to work on in practice.
Right.
There is that to be said. All in all, though, Oklahoma, obviously, they have to block better against running the football on the offensive line. That's clear. No one would believe that they did a good enough job.
No, that was evident. That was
blocking to run the football.
I think we almost simultaneously text each other that same. I was actually relaying that to you, and you said, "O line needs work."
Yeah, I mean,
yep.
There's no doubt that that's true. But anyway, this week it's a throwaway. I mean,
exhibition.
Literally, it doesn't matter what happens. Oklahoma's going to win this game. Flat out, they're going to win. And then Nebraska comes to town, and that kind of starts what the season's going to be. So it's really kind of a boring week as far as OU goes, because all that's going to be talked about now for 2 weeks is the Tulane game and what they didn't do right. And it doesn't matter if you do it right against Western Carolina, because you're supposed to. So come next Monday, then Nebraska's coming to town.
If you're playing a team that Kansas can beat, then.
Then you get to the point where, okay, now we'll see these results and what they kind of extrapolate out to for the rest of the season. Right. Around the country, really kind of a light week, especially when you look at what happened last week. Two games between ranked opponents. You've got Oregon going to Ohio State. Have you seen any update for Kayvon Thibodeau and his status?
I have not. I know he's questionable, very questionable.
So that would obviously hurt Oregon's chances. Ohio State struggled early, ended up handling Minnesota in game one. Their receivers, whoa.
Yeah, best in the nation.
Easily. Whoa. Man, they've got him. Their question is, how fast can C.J. Stroud come along? You know, Oregon, who knows? They look not very good in a win against Fresno State. Without Thibodeau, you know, that's one of the things that could help putting pressure on a young quarterback could obviously help the Ducks. But
any game that's not ranked or a ranked versus an unranked, and there's a few. I mean, there's some. Anything stand out to you? I have a couple.
Okay, go.
Well, A&M had a slow start last week. Now they're on the road at Mile High taking on Colorado.
Yeah.
Could be interesting.
Texas, Arkansas, obviously.
Well, yeah, that's an obvious answer, sure. And there's one more. Couple more. No, just one. Utah, BYU.
Mm-hmm.
Because of the rivalry aspect there, and now there's some rooting interest there, I guess. I guess, are we calling them a – do we claim that as a Big 12 win?
Oh, yeah, if they win, they do.
BYU wins.
For sure.
Any interest in USC-Stanford in the nightcap?
Man, you wonder if Stanford is that bad. Because Kansas State just railroaded them.
They did. Now watch them turn around and beat USC.
Well, that's that's kind of the nature of this. About the time you overreact to what you saw in the first week, something will happen. And I promise you that'll happen in the NFL. We'll come in here on Monday going, geez, that team looked terrible. And then the next week they'll beat somebody they have no business, or you think they have no business of beating.
Right.
Texas-Arkansas to me is a good one. We'll see. You know, Hudson Card did enough. 14 of 21, a little over 200 yards. He's got Robinson always. Arkansas's kind of that chic pick to be a better team in the SEC West.
This is supposed to be
kind
the
of
year
their make a bowl
to make that next step.
Yeah.
Last year they had a nice year. They looked, you know, they didn't look bad like they had looked. This would be a big step for them if they can notch this win at home.
Yeah, and it's that old Southwest Conference rivalry.
Yeah.
Between these two schools. I'm not going to come in here and say, oh, Texas is for sure back if they win this game and win it handily.
Yeah.
But it's going to be two good wins. Listen, beating number 23 at home and then going to Arkansas and win, that's better than what we've seen out of Texas in a while. So that would be kind of feathers in their hat, and then the hype will start to really ramp up for October 9th if Texas can get this win over the Arkansas Razorbacks. And then, of course, to me, the biggest game in the country is going to be the battle for the Cy-Hawk Trophy in Ames, Iowa, Iowa State. Iowa State did not look very good last week, 16-10 win over Northern Iowa. Iowa looked great in a 34-6 win against Indiana. I will say this, though.
Did that line, that open, did it flip?
What?
I thought it opened with Iowa as the favorite.
No.
Now Iowa State's a 4.5 favorite.
Iowa State was always the favorite.
Okay. What were you going to say?
Iowa won 34-6. That is true. They also managed 303 total yards. 4-12 on third down. They threw it for 145, ran it for 158. You know what they did do?
Zap.
They intercepted Michael Penix Jr. three times and ran two of them back for touchdowns.
So
what I'm telling you is,
it's not as,
when you look at the score, Iowa beating Indiana 34-6, it tells a tick of a different story than what you see when you look in the numbers.
Yeah.
Iowa State has struggled in their first game for years. I just think you're going to hear a ton of Iowa, 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 Iowa. Iowa's also won five in a row in this series. But watch out. Be very, very careful. And by the way, if you hadn't made your picks in the Western Oklahoma Realty College Pick'em, you better do it. Got till, I guess, 11 a.m. tomorrow to make your picks for week two. Have we gained? We have 59. 59 participants in the Western Oklahoma Realty College Pick'em. If you haven't signed up yet, you still got time. Listen, you just missed 1 week. Plenty of chances to make up those games that you missed last week. Go to the ESPN website or our Skinny on Sports Facebook page. We have a link to the ESPN website on our Skinny on Sports Facebook page. It takes you right to the group, and you can sign up. It's free to sign up, and it's going to be a year-long contest. We're picking games against the spread. That's why you have a good chance to catch up, even if you missed the first week. Because 7-3 was the best 6-4 next. So if you can reel off a couple of winning weeks in a row, all of a sudden, even without the first 10, boom, you're right back in it. So come play along all season long. Great prize package at the end of the season. Thank you to Tyler Harrison, Robbie Allen, and all the gang at Western Oklahoma Realty. People before property is their motto.
From the text line, I request Jared drive back from Guymon tonight. I need Skinny to bring his A game tomorrow. Assume we talk about the golf tournament tomorrow. I will need a bonus if I'm driving back three straight hours just to aid your golf.
No, game. Here's what I've already kind of thought about this. I feel like Canadian is a pretty good midpoint.
I just looked that up this morning.
I feel like it's a pretty good midpoint. Yes. So what I'm thinking is, because you're all going to have to pick me up,
I'll drive all the way to Canadian.
You can drive
to
Canadian. Then I'll drive from Canadian to Guymon, and then Guymon back to Canadian.
And then I'll get Canadian back too.
That's right.
I'll take that deal all day.
That's right. That's what we'll do.
Okay.
And I I also had a – did you have any updates on restaurant –
A lot of the same stuff we found.
I talked to...
And I asked him about that one you found. He said he'd never heard of it, so...
IT guy. The IT guy from Guymon that I sent you
the
password and whatnot. That was his spot.
The place we found?
The Red Top.
The Red Top.
Round Top.
I think that's the winner.
Good point about Purdy. He does tend to throw interceptions in big games. That is true.
Yep.
We have seen that. There is no doubt about that, but we'll see. I have a feeling it's going to be one of those fairly low scoring games. Kind of a Big Ten at noon type game. You know those ones you don't really like to watch?
Yes, I know.
I think those are the ones that it might be. High school football tonight, we will be in Guymon for the Elks and the Tigers. Did you ever find a Sayre Carnegie score from last night?
Well, on Scordle it said tonight, and then I scroll down, and then it said like it also had it scheduled for. I mean, it said last night. Then I scroll down, and it said for tonight too. So I don't know. Text your boy. I don't know.
Not your
boy. Your guy, your bud. I don't want to call him. You know what I'm talking about. It's in our fantasy football league.
Oh, they don't. I don't know. They're listening. Does anybody know?
You think we've had a ton of texts today?
I haven't
Does
seen.
Does Sayre play today, or did they play last night?
I just
night?
Never saw anything.
I didn't see
any scores last
thing.
Night.
I never saw a score.
It was Thursday on the OSSA rankings website. It was Thursday in the paper, which I bet they get that from the same spot.
Yes.
Haven't heard the score.
I'm going to assume Squirtle gets it from the same spot. Yeah.
So, anyhow, that was last night. We've got the Elks and Guymon tonight. It's a game that Elk City won 68-13 last year right here in Big Elk Stadium. Guymon lost their opener to Liberal Kansas 56-16. And so, on paper, it looks like the Elks should move to 3-0, win all their non-district games for the first time since 2011. Just for me, I'd love to see Elk City be able to run the ball at will like they have been able to. Also, maybe get a little bit of the throwing game going. You know, Culver played quarterback in junior high, hasn't played a ton of it in high school. You know, get his feet for a senior. You know what I'm saying? He hasn't had a bunch of snaps under center, so get Corey some throws and cut out the ridiculousness.
Right.
The penalties from last week. And
it really felt last week they were kind of baited into that.
It was, but you can't let that happen.
Against a team that knew that they were going to get that was going to lose, and so they got into the Big Elk's heads.
Can't let that happen.
It is a mental thing, and you can't let that happen. And you know, like anything in life, it's not as much as how tough you are physically, but how tough you are mentally. Blocking out that noise. Stop, you know, not letting it get to you. You know, a great example last night. I don't know if I should bring this to air. Well, okay. I was taking on, our girls were playing softball, and our last game taking on a team, our girls were handling them thoroughly. And then towards the end of the game, when we would come off the field, our girls would, when they were done batting, our girls would kind of say something like, "Well, they're talking out there. They're talking to us. They're talking." And I said, "Girls, you don't talk back to them. Just talk back with your bats. Just hit the ball. Play your game." I'm telling this story to relate this to the Big Elks. Play your game. Don't let them talk to you. Just let them talk. You talk with your game.
That's right.
That's all. It's as simple as that.
All right, Sarah plays today, so that was an error.
It was an error.
From the Oklahoman and the OSSA website. I'd say it couldn't find a score anywhere.
No,
it couldn't. On Facebook, no. Looking at people that would have been there, I thought, well, there's something fishy. Either it didn't happen or it happens today.
Yeah.
So there you go.
Okay, good. Good.
And that makes, you know, that's...
It's called Friday Night Lights, not Thursday.
Yeah, but that's not the... It's not that way anymore, man.
I know.
Elsewhere, so Sarah Carnegie, Merritt and OCA is Saturday at noon. As we mentioned, that'll be on Paragon TV. And then the 4A1 games have great opportunities here for Clinton. And a bunch of them are on the road. Clinton's at Heritage Hall. You've got Cash at Plainview. You've got Newcastle at Tuttle. And you've got Elgin at Blanchard. A bunch of good chances there.
Yeah, I love it. That, like we said yesterday about 4A1. Great opportunity to flex their muscles. So it's going to be an interesting night, not only for us all the way up in Guymon, but we're going to definitely keep our eye on those other scores and try to keep you updated. I'm very interested to see all those. I mean, I'm trying to think of one that would be better than the other. I mean, there's a bunch of opportunities for 4A1 that could look good, make them look real good.
Yeah, I think, I mean, to me, the one that would be like, whoa, it's if Newcastle beat Tuttle.
Yes. Because
you're talking about a team that's kind of supposedly middle of the road in 4A1 against the number one team in the state.
Right.
You know, Clinton beating Heritage Hall. You know, Clinton was the runner-up last year, played in the state title game. Heritage Hall's number 3-3. You know, that's one of those, like, best beating best. But if the middle...
Yeah.
If the middle could beat best, then you're going, wait a minute. What's really going on here?
Right.
You know, Elgin, Blanchard. Maybe Blanchard's not quite at the level that they have been after the first week, but Elgin wasn't – I mean, they didn't win a game last year. They were by far picked last in the district. And they go on the road and beat Anadarko by a couple of touchdowns. It was top five in 3A preseason. Whoa. Those are those kind of – whoa.
Yeah.
What's going on here? And then Bethany at Woodward – that one, you know, Bethany's got two pretty good wins. Do they take their foot off the gas against Woodward? Can the Boomers bounce back? We'll see. But some
are
teams.
Are we on in Woodward?
I don't think so.
Okay, they looked horrible last week.
Well, there you go.
They just couldn't move the ball. They could not move
Well, here's the
ball.
The deal. I don't know if that was a Woodward problem or a Clinton is just really good on defense problem. Maybe a little bit of both, but I tend to think that Clinton, you know, scoring –
someone asked me about
scoring
Clinton's
a couple
defense,
of touchdowns.
Just watching Clinton's defense, and this is just a sample of one game, but I thought, man, it would not be an over-exaggerated comment to say that they could have the best defense in 4A. Because they just took the ball away at will and they stopped the run up front. But how good is Woodward? I don't know. But they did not look good. But you're right. It could be because they're going up against a really good defense. We got to play a few more games to get those answers.
Yeah, I think that's right. And first game, there's always certain teams takes longer to get going.
It was a weird situation. Weird. They played at a 1 o'clock on a Saturday.
Instead of you're all geared up for 7 o'clock Friday night. Yeah. And then it's kind of down. For sure. Yeah, it was an odd game.
Yeah.
The way it just everything came about of actually getting played. It's going to be a fun night. Everybody be safe traveling. We'll be back here on Monday. Skinny on Sports right here on the Sports Animal.
You've been listening to the Skinny on Sports podcast with Aaron Cowan. Be sure to hit that subscribe button to get alerts of when the latest podcast is available. Thanks for listening.